Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. The show is available on iTunes and, like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving weekend. I hope you got some time off. I know I did. I had nine days where I was away from the station, and I have not been away from WFYI this long since I went to Scotland back in 2019 with Earlham College. So anyway, it was good to be back. I know it was tough to, especially because we are now in grown-up movie season. It is the most wonderful time of the year. I remember it was Thanksgiving week, and as a critic, we love this time because award screen season has happened. The front page, the front steps of my house with lots of little envelopes and lots of email notifications that award screeners are coming up. So we love this time. I know Thanksgiving week was kind of a tough call to take off, but the fact that I had the time off. Of course, yes, Glass Onion opened the new Knives Out mystery with Daniel Craig and a whole new slew of suspects, including Edward Norton, Kate Hudson, who's really good in this, Dave Bautista, Catherine Hahn, and the Agatha Christie films, like the ones with Hercule Poirot and Miss Marple and the others. So long as you've got the one detective, they'll be making – Rian Johnson will be making some more of these, I'm sure. And it was fun to see him on a new location. They do address – they set it in 2020, and they address the quarantine and COVID right out of the gate and then move it out of the way. Word was all of the cast and crew all lived together basically in lockdown while they were making this film. There's some cute cameos in the film. One in particular that made me kind of geek out is there is, and it's early on, and we had heard about these cameos involving Angela Lansbury and Stephen Sondheim. If you get a chance, I don't know if it's streaming. I just bought a physical copy of it. But if you get a chance after watching Knives Out and Glass Onion, check out a film from 1973 called The Last of Sheila, because it is and it's a similar plot line where in this one, in Glass Onion, Edward Norton, who's also very, very good in this film, invites friends of his from college to his little island empire in Greece for an evening of – a weekend, I should say, of frolicking and games and a reenactment of a murder mystery that turns out to be much more real. And in 1973 with The Last of Sheila, a group of friends get together on a yacht and play games, and things get a little too real. Sounds familiar. James Coburn, Diane Cannon, Raquel Welch, Richard Benjamin, a few others. And that film, The Last of Sheila, was co-written by Anthony Perkins. Yes, that Anthony Perkins. And Stephen Sondheim. It's the only film credit Sondheim had. So anyway, if you get a chance, it's a nice complimentary piece. So yeah, fun. Big budget. I'm glad to know that big budget murder mysteries are in vogue, thanks to Knives Out and now with Glass Onion. So looks cool, a lot of fun. If you enjoy the first one, you'll enjoy this one. You don't need to watch the first one to enjoy this one. It's just fun. Daniel Craig's having a really good time. So I'm hoping this continues on in his post-Bond career. And who wouldn't want to, you know, live in Greece for a while with a bunch of famous friends and hang out? So it is a good hang and a smart murder mystery. So, yeah, Glass Onion's open, of course, this week. Also got to watch Pinocchio with the family, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. And there's a couple things going for this. Well, one, it's Guillermo del Toro because you have really sincere filmmaking and an off-putting look at times. I'll put it this way. If you enjoyed The Shape of Water, if you are absolutely down for Shape of Water, you'll absolutely be down for Pinocchio. Also, the fact is, the other thing I will ask you is, when was the last Pinocchio story you watched, and how long ago was it? The further you've had experiencing, whether it's Walt Disney or Roberto Benigni or the one with Martin Landau, watch this with fresh eyes. Lovely voice work from Ewan McGregor, Ron Perlman, David Bradley is Geppetto, and I'm really happy David Bradley is getting some love in this film. He is, when I first noticed him, he was the very quiet older brother in Mike Leigh's Another Year. And if you look on his IMDb, he's done a slew of stuff. So I'm glad he's getting some notice. John Turturro's involved with this. Cate Blanchett, Christoph Waltz, Tim Blake Nelson, Tilda Swinton. Some of the usual suspects of the players. And Gregory Mann is the voice of Pinocchio. So it's supposed to be off-putting at times as far as the look, and maybe you feel a little uncomfortable watching this. And that's Disney's been doing that for decades. You know, watch the original Pinocchio, watch Cinderella, watch Snow White. So it really works, and it's just a nice emotional ride, and it's one of the best-looking animated films. There is another animated film that's going to be in competition with Pinocchio, But yeah, I really, really enjoyed Pinocchio. So go check that out. That is open this week. Also opening this week is Bones and All, which is the new film from Luca Guadagnino, who gave us Call Me By Your Name, I Am Love, Suspiria. And this one is a coming-of-age road trip film. It stars Taylor Russell and Timothée Chalamet, a dressed-down Timothée Chalamet. They're trying to de-glam him in this one. But Taylor has been abandoned by her father to seek life on her own. And along the way, she meets Lee, played by Timothée Chalamet. She is Marin. And they wind up going on the road together, coming across some adventurous folks like Michael Stolberg. Mark Rylance is in this. And it is what looks like a budding kind of late teen love story. But it has one twist. Taylor Russell and Timothée Chalamet's characters are cannibals. And so it's not Twilight, thank God, but it is they have their need, but there's also this desire to just be regular people. So Chalamet and Russell have some nice work together. Rylance is creepy as hell. Although the fact that you have Mark Rylance in this film, and there's not giving away a whole lot, but there's more, you expect to see more of his presence in the film, and that kind of takes away some of the shock of the ending. It's a kind of a step down for me compared to Call Me By Your Name and I Am Love and A Bigger Bang. I really enjoyed those. So I guess it's minor Luca, if I'm quoting The Squid and the Whale. But the actors work. And there's also, by the way, I don't think they shot it in the city, but there's also a reference to Centerville, Indiana. So that for Indiana film folk, that's cute. But yeah, that is also opening this week. It's good, but I think I've been expecting excellent from Luca. So Bones and All also opening this week. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. We'll go through some video titles, and then we'll go around the horn, and then we will grab a pencil and find out what you've been watching this week. And then we have a nice little audio tribute to Irene Cara, because she deserves that. Going through videos, and now I have to strike a balance between award screeners and films that have been sent to me, so I appreciate everyone's patience on this. From Welgo USA Entertainment, I don't think I've talked about this one, so I apologize for being late, but it's a film called Hansan, Rising Dragon, and it is set in 1592, and it's a fight between Korea and Japan. this is a film, this is a genre that's not particularly my favorite. It's the war film and the war planning film. If you're into films like Gods and Generals and Gettysburg and Midway, I remember seeing Midway as a child. That was probably not a great move. A lot of soldiers and officers talking. And in this case, there is a lot of that, but there's also a lot of CGI fights, battle sequences. And maybe near the last 10 minutes or so, the battle scenes are kind of cool, but the CG is very distracting in this case for me. And I know I grew up in a generation where we could have thousands of extras, and it's just easier to make these type of battle scenes. But unfortunately, it was cold and CG and just not my cup of tea. So sorry about that. Also out on, from Kino Lorber, is an Italian film called Nick the Sting. Now, I've mentioned before on these airwaves, especially with the documentary Eurocrime by my buddy and guest, I wish he was a frequent guest, Mike Malloy. Eurocrime was about the cop and mob films from Italy in the 1970s. They, because of the success of Dirty Harry, The French Connection, and The Godfather, the 70s had a slew of these Italian cop mobster films. And this one's an oddity because it's 1976 and we're doing an Italian version of The Sting 3 years after the fact. A film that's filled with split screens and watch imagery because it's set in Switzerland. And we have a guy, a grifter named Mick, played by Luke Miranda, who is going after crime boss Lee J. Cobb, who is responsible for killing his friend. Sounds like The Sting, right? No Redford, no Newman. But you do get Lee J. Cobb in one of his final performances. Unfortunately, not a lot for Lee to do. For the most part, he is sitting at a chair. Maybe it's the Bruce Willis type role. And then near the end of the film, you do see him literally on the run. But Luke Miranda is a guy, if you're familiar with some other films, he has appeared in like Le Mans, Torso, Red Sun. The other thing that bums me out, I forgot, with Lee J. Cobb's performance, it's dubbed. And we all know that in Italian films, all the dialogue is dubbed in post. That's just the environment and how they do things. And the fact that they weren't able to bring, and the film doesn't have an English language track, which is also disappointing. Because if they did have Lee J. Cobb's vocals, which you should have, that just makes it a little more entertaining. It's a decent grift that happens, the elaborate plot to get Lee J. Cobb's character, but it's not as much fun as The Sting. It's directed by Fernando Di Leo, who was the writer of The Italian Connection and did other Italian crime films like The Boss, Rulers of the City, and Blood and Diamonds. So the film, if you're into that, it's there. It's like I said, it's a decent film. But one of these special features involves Mike Malloy, who talks about the history of the split screen, because there are quite a few of those in this film. Probably the split screen in American audiences introduction was probably 1968's The Thomas Crown Affair. But he goes back even further with films like Pillow Talk, Bye Bye Birdie. And then by the late 60s, early 70s, films like Woodstock, The Boston Strangler, Grand Prix, Wicked Wicked, Dionysus in 1969, The Andromeda Strain. Anyway, it's a cool supplement, a cool little documentary about a style of filmmaking that we don't see much these days. But always good to see Mike Malloy and talking about the history of the split screen. Also from Kino Lorber is a 2011 drama called Oka, about a young American stuck in New Jersey who yearns to travel back to Central Africa to record the Bayaka Pygmies, obsessed with their music and their sound. And it's Larry is played by Chris Marshall, for you fans of Love Actually and Death at a Funeral. Little cameo by Peter Riegert, who plays his doctor. He says Larry is losing some of his hearing, so now it is more important for Larry to go back to Africa and record. It's directed by Lavinia Courier, who did Passion of the Desert, Passion in the Desert, which I believe I talked about earlier this year. And we find out about the heavy prejudice in Africa over the Pygmy tribe, the fact that their forest is being destroyed, the fact that the local government wants permits for his recordings and bribes, the corruption amongst the town. And it turns out to be a harder task for Larry than it had before. Gorgeous footage of the countryside, also heartbreaking footage of small town poverty. And so it's a good film. It's uncomfortable at times because of the beauty and the poverty all want coincide. But yeah, look out for Oka from Kino Lorber, which is from 2011. Now, friends, also from Kino Lorber and Code Red, I'm really excited. When I found out that this film was coming out on Blu-ray, 1987's Terror Squad. Now, a little background on this with this film and me. A group of guys I hung out with in college at the Ball State University. This was our go-to bad film. Everybody had a VHS copy of this, and we made copies of copies, and everybody had one. I have one. My VHS copy is somewhere in the Soce archives, so it's there. But so besides the fact that this is a low-budget film of terrorists from a Middle Eastern country, or to use the ugly American term, brown people, come and invade Kokomo, Indiana. And the film is actually shot in Kokomo, Indiana, as well as Michigan City, a little bit of Connersville. But and so we have this low-budget, low-energy film. Well, especially if there's a Death to America rally where the extras just have low energy. And, there's a flag burned, and that's about as much activity. You know, it takes a lot for these extras to raise their arms. Cheap graphics, and we get aerial shots of Kokomo. Somebody got a helicopter, and it's, I think it's trying to push itself off as like a Hoosier version of Red Dawn. We have a group of high school student cliches, your jock, your nerd who's into pornography through, or at least if he's not into pornography, he's in the workout videos on his portable television. You have the rocker who's friends with the janitor who's also a musician, the cheerleader, and they're all stuck in detention. Not quite the Breakfast Club. Or imagine if terrorists took over the Breakfast Club. That sort of happens. Eventually the terrorists show up, and it's also a film where, as the guys at Golden Globus have mentioned, if you bump into a car, there is an explosion, whether there is leaking gasoline or not, or fire. Very cheap TV studio announcing that terrorists have taken over the town and shooting things up. You have Chuck Connors is your big name in this. He plays the sheriff, a sheriff who likes to wear a Dodgers jacket just to remind people that he once played semi-pro ball with the Brooklyn Dodgers organization. We also have the black guy from Dawn of the Dead who shows up as one of the deputies in this. But the shootings in this film make the A-team look like American Sniper. There's a high body count for Kokomo, but between the law enforcement and the terrorists, there's a lot of missed shots in this. And if you are from Kokomo, one of the things I heard was that if you were from Kokomo, you made fun big time of the location and continuity problems. I guess it's kind of like ER, where if you're from Chicago, you know where things are and when things are not. There's a really long chase at the beginning of the film. It goes for about 20 minutes. And my two favorite gaffes in this film, if you are not a fan of car chases, here's something to pay attention to with this film. It's similar to Ed Wood's treatment of Day and Night in Plan 9 from Outer Space. The terrorists have a brown car, and during their chase and shootout, the windshield is shot out. But during the chase, you can count the number, you'll lose count of the number of times you see a close up of the terrorists without a windshield, and then in a faraway shot, when it's them turning or it's just an establishment shot of the car on the road, you'll see, yes, a windshield. Near the end of the film, there is a bus chase where the bus literally goes from a large bus to a small bus. It's that kind of picture. It's It's fun bad. It is pizza and beer night. There's a Kokomo Police Department with really generic lettering on it. There's a few references to Dog Day Afternoon that Chuck Connors has to bring up. There's a SWAT team member with a pump shotgun. I didn't know that was regulation for the SWAT team. And also bazookas with no blowback. Nothing comes out from the other end of the bazooka, apparently. We learned that from the enforcer. That actually does happen. But, yeah, this is just a – it's a fun, bad film, and it has an Indiana connection. So – and I am hoping the Golden Globus guys will check out this film so I can discuss it on their film – on their show. But, yeah, it came out earlier this year, but I finally bought a copy from Kino Lorber, Code Red, Terror Squad from 1987. I might be talking about this film again. I don't know, but it's just fun. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Let's go around the horn a little bit. Over at IU Cinema tonight, if you're listening quickly, 7 o'clock, Friday, December 2nd, Hallelujah, Leonard Cohen, A Journey, A Song. We talked about this fine documentary earlier this year on the program. It's a can't miss, and it's a really good look at not just the history of the song, but Leonard Cohen, the man. Saturday, December 3rd at 1 o'clock, just announced apparently, the Dog Video Fest 2022. I'm reading from the screen. Watch the most adorable dog videos the internet has to offer. Support our supply drive for the Monroe County Humane Association and meet some precious pups on site. That is 1 o'clock tomorrow. Sunday, December 4th. Swoon Fearless at 1 o'clock, a documentary about the street about street artist Caldonia Curry, a.k.a. Swoon, her collaborators, inspirations, and antics, and a Q&A with the filmmaker will follow the screening. So Swoon Fearless, Sunday, December 4th at 1 o'clock. Thursday, December 8th at 7 p.m. is the original 1957 Western 310 to Yuma with Glenn Ford. Friday, December 9th at 7 p.m. is Scrooge from 1988. Saturday, December 10th, the remake, the 2007 James Mangold version of 310 to Yuma. And there will be a Q&A with special guests, they're not telling us who, on Saturday, December 10th at 7 p.m. Sunday, December 11th at noon, the Study Break Mega Marathon. 12 hours of back-to-back movies just to give you a break from studying or celebrate the end of the semester or just because you want to watch some awesome movies. And I don't think they're telling us what they are. Hold on a minute. Let me see if I can find... Ah, okay, here we go. School Days at noon. Better Luck Tomorrow at 2:10. Blockers at 3:55. Summer School at 5:45. Yeah. The Faculty at 7:30. Rushmore at 9:20. And The Craft at 11 p.m. That is happening over at IU Cinema. At the Historic Art Craft Theater this weekend, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m. Sunday, 2 and 5:30 p.m., A Christmas Story. So you can watch it on the big screen, and you'll have to watch it on TV. Friday and Saturday and Sunday, December 9th, 10th, and 11th, 2 and 7:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, 2 and 5:30 p.m. on Sunday, yes, from 1954, White Christmas. Thursday, December 15th at 7 p.m., Remember the Night from 1940. And then December 16th, 17th, and 18th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Friday and Saturday, 2 and 5:30 p.m. on Sunday, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Thursday, December 22nd, 6:30 p.m., it's not a film, but Jerry Navarro's trio doing music from A Charlie Brown Christmas. There you go. All right, let's grab a pencil. Let's find out what you have been watching this week. Well, actually, the last 2 weeks. So we start on Facebook with Jamie, who writes Princess Switch, Switched Again, Slumberland, Leprechaun's Christmas Gold, Scooby-Doo and Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed. These are the live-action ones. The 2018 Halloween, Halloween Kills, Frosty's Winter Wonderland, Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Disenchanted, and Noel. Dawn writes Devotion with my pilot history buff while he was home from college. Hope all is well, Mr. Sosie. Thank you, Dawn. Melissa, I got to see Melissa at the Whale screening last night. We'll talk about the Whale on next week's program. Surviving Christmas, Alone Together, Violent Night, The Whale, three nondescript Hallmark movies. Uh-oh. Careful. Some people might not like that. And A Match Made at Christmas. So thank you, Melissa. Yeah, I I stay at my mother-in-law's a couple nights a week to make sure she's all right. And, the Christmas movie, the Hallmark movies are getting in the way of my Murder, She Wrote. So I'm kind of, anyway, it's my problem. Dustin writes, A Delicate Balance for 1973. The 1982 TV movie of Barefoot in the Park and in Devotion. All right, I have to talk about this. First off, Dusty, thank you. Glad you got to see A Delicate Balance. This isn't a TV movie from 1982. It is a filmed play. In the early incarnations of HBO, in the early 80s, I got to see a number of these filmed plays, and HBO did a bunch of these. And the first one I ever watched was Barefoot in the Park, with Richard Thomas as Paul, Bess Armstrong as Corey. Oh, Bess Armstrong. Hans Conried, if I remember right, as Victor Velasco. Barbara Barry as Corey's mother. Now, I loved this production. And then I wound up seeing the Robert Redford Jane Fonda film, and I got to play the telephone repairman in Barefoot in the Park at Richmond Civic many moons ago. This is my first Richmond Civic play, and for the life of me, I couldn't remember who played the telephone repairman in this HBO televised production. So I found it on the interweb in a questionable way. The gentleman, the actor who played the telephone repairman in 1982, was a then-that guy, James Cromwell. And looking back, I probably knew James Cromwell from two things. He was Stretch Cunningham on All in the Family. He was also James Coco's very French chauffeur in Murder by Death. And so it was fun to see him in his character actor that guy days. So Dustin, I'm glad you got to see Barefoot in the Park. That's a favorite. I also got to see similar versions of Plaza Suite with Lee Grant and Jerry Orbach. There was the one of Sherlock Holmes, Frank Langella, Bus Stop with Margot Kidder and Tim Matheson as Cherry and Bo. But that production also had Pat Hingle, Claude Akins, Barry Corbin. It was really good. That was my introduction to that. Separate Tables, I remember, I believe, was another filmed one. So anyway, thank you, Dustin. JJ writes, Duel, Children of Men, Glass Onion, loved it, he said. Underwater, and the greatest gangster movie never made, Martin Scorsese's 1973 masterpiece, Goncharov. Okay, well, I think he means Mean Streets, but anyway. I know what you meant, JJ. Eric writes, First Views, Where the Crawdads Sing, Spider-Man, No Way Home, Don't Worry, Darling, and Everything Everywhere All at Once. His rewatches, Raging Bull, The Thing from Another World, The Glass Key, 1940s Pinocchio, The Dirty Dozen, Dark Passage, The Jungle Book, and Midnight Run. Doug writes, A Boy Named Charlie Brown, Snoopy Come Home, Elf, and Disenchanted. Nick Rogers writes, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, EO, The Inspection, Metal Lords, Mr. Harrigan's Phone, Slumberland, The Bubble, Night Ride, Devotion, All the Beauty and All the and the Bloodshed, Argentina 1985, and Saint Omer. Linda writes, The Family Stone, my favorite Christmas movie, ooh, and Princess Caribou, Kevin Kline in a hilarious romantic comedy with his wife, with Phoebe Cates. Never forget that. I remember that from 1994. Eric writes, Roadhouse, somehow I was able to make it this far in life without seeing the cinematic classic. Hey, it happens, Eric. Pain don't hurt. And also, Where the Crawdads Sing. Craig writes, Up the Junction, Quartermass and the Pit, Rasputin, the Mad Monk, somebody's been watching stuff from the 60s, and Hammer, The Innocents and the Wooden Horse. Nikki writes, Enola Holmes 1 and 2, and Where the Crawdads Sing. Or as Nikki wrote, Where the Crawdads Sign. It's it's not Children of a Lesser God meets Where the Crawdads. But I like Where the Crawdads sign. Jessica writes, Slumberland, Black Phone, Halloween Ends, Crimes of the Future, Disenchanted, Rare Exports, Guardians of the Galaxy, Holiday Special, Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows 1 and 2. Nikki writes, The Fablemans and The Lego Movie 1 and 2. Amanda went to the library. Amanda gave me pictures. Tuesdays with Maury. Friendsgiving. A Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. Yes, we did watch Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. And never forget, somebody sit next to Franklin. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And What's Cooking? Not enough people have seen that one, Amanda. Good call. Amanda also watched Precious, Ali, A Christmas Story's Christmas, and Dead to Me. So thank you there, Amanda. Good to see you at the party last week. Jeff writes The Ice Road. John writes Glass Onion and in an actual movie theater, if you can believe it. I can believe it, John. I mean, I haven't done that question yet. It's been, what, 2.5 years, over 2.5 years of have you actually returned to the movie theater? So that might be a future film sociology question. But I also saw Glass Onion in an actual theater. I love press screenings. I'm spoiled. Josh writes Idiocracy, you know, the Mike Judge documentary. Don writes The Last Survivors. Teresa writes the 2019 Emma, Mamma Mia, 16 Candles, Bride and Prejudice. Great call, Teresa. I love Bride and Prejudice. It's a Bollywood version of Pride and Prejudice. Footloose, Meatballs, and Little Darlings. David writes for the Film Club, Spirited Away and The Fall. Disenchanted on Disney with the girls. The documentary, Is This Black Enough For You? David, I'm about half hour into Is This Black Enough For You? It's from Elvis Mitchell, and it's really, really, really good. And, of course, it's about blaxploitation, which I love. And then he writes, Planting the Seed, Black Panther, and Violent Night this weekend in theaters. All right. Tom writes The Front and Automat. Marianne writes Glass Onion. Andra Fay writes The Three Burials of Mikitas Estrada and No Country for Old Men. Now, there's a Tommy Lee Jones double feature right there, and I love The Three Burials of Mikitas Estrada. This is an example, friends. I use, and it's because of Three Burials. This is why I will do a best and worst at the end of the calendar year, the best and worst films of the year, my picks, and then I will do an updated version in March. Because in 2005, at the end of the calendar year, my best film that year was Brokeback Mountain. And then, God, probably 2 months later, Indianapolis finally got The Three Burials of Mikitas Estrada, which is directed by Tommy Lee Jones and starred Tommy Lee Jones. It's if you took a morality play and a Sam Peckinpah Western and kind of combined it, it just blew me away, and that was my new number one. So that's why I'm obligated, I think, as a critic, in my own mind, to do one at the end of the calendar year and then do an update probably around Oscar time. But no, I do that because of my encounter with The Three Burials of Mikitas Estrada. So thank you, Andrew. Oh, Andrew Fay has his P.S. Also, Solo, Guilty Pleasures, People We Hate at the Wedding, Dead to Me, and started watching Wednesday. Loving it. Thank you, Andrew Fay. One of the blues midwives in the Soci household. Adam writes Mandy. Kurt writes, we had three films over the holiday weekend. This is where he works. Where he helps out at Beltrace. My Week with Marilyn, Home for the Holidays, and The Return of Martin Guerre. I'm intrigued by that. And I asked about attendance, good attendance at all three. Martin Guerre was just the second of our Foreign Film Friday monthly series, but was double from the previous month, which was Babette's Feast. I discovered that people didn't know the subtitles would be in English, so stayed away the first time. Most Saturday night films have about 20 to 25 people attending, with 30 being the post-COVID high. Prior to COVID, 30 was a more typical number, with the occasional 45 to 50 in attendance. There's your Beltrace information here at Film Sociology. Thank you, Kurt. Rachel writes, The Ash Lad, In the Hall of the Mountain King, Dracula Untold, and George and the Dragon. Terry writes, Prince of Darkness, This Gun for Hire, The Glass Key, 24x36, a movie about movie posters, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and The Man Who Fell to Earth. And Eric chiming in, clearly you've been availing yourself to the Criterion Channel. Good call, Eric. David writes, Man on Fire, It's a Wonderful Life, the George C. Scott version of A Christmas Carol, the Santa Claus 1 and 2, Prep and Landing, and Cuz Christmas. Thank you, David. Robert writes, My name is John Johnson, but you can call me Vicky. Thank you. Robert Muggy writes, The Wonder, Another Year. See, I just mentioned what I said, really, you know, thank you, Geppetto. Senso, The Long Voyage Home, A Kind of Loving, Call Northside 777, The Dark Corner, See How They Run, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, Don't Worry, Darling, and Death Be My Destiny. David writes, Truly, Madly, Deeply. Hi, we miss you, Alan. Kevin writes, Don't Look Back, No Direction Home, Let There Be Drums, which I had mentioned, I think, on the prior show on Kino Lorber Video, Let's Get Lost, and The Crawling Eye. Jeff writes, True Lies, Holiday Spectacular, and Monster-in-Law. Bill writes, Bullet, never seen all of it before. Cabaret, never seen any of it before. Wow, Bill, really? Man, I love, well, it happens, friends. This happens all the time, especially with theater folk. Wow. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. And Bill chimes in, the car chase is so good. Bullet did win an Oscar for Best Editing. And finally, Gary writes, Tommy Boy, Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, Rise of Skywalker, Santo versus the Vampire Women from Mystery Science Theater, very good, the remake of Pete's Dragon, The Straight Story, G-rated David Lynch, Bride of Frankenstein, Son of Frankenstein, Ghost of Frankenstein, It Happened One Night, not Frankenstein, and then Frankenstein. The Last Picture Show, The Wild Angels, The Terror, Dr. No, Vampira and Me, Elvira's Movie Macabre, Frankenstein's Castle of Freaks, The Sword and the Stone, The Original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Original Dracula, and finally, Putney Swope. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch, the last 2 weeks, I should say. Hopefully you got to watch some films that are new, or at least good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Golden Globus Theater this week is Blood Moon with Gary Daniels and Frank Gorshin. You should check that out. Last week's was Jean-Claude Van Damme's Time Cop, which I actually got to see in the theater. So check those out. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. We are in grown-up movie season, so enjoy this. Thank you for listening. We are going to end this week's Film Sociology with an audio tribute to Irene Cara, who died earlier this week. So involved with, well, sang two Best Original Song Oscar winners. We'll get to that in a little bit, but never forget, she's got a decent filmography from the 70s and 80s. She was a dancer in Apple Pie and appeared in, she was a member of the Short Circus and the Electric Company. I forgot about that. But look for, and I have a VHS copy, I should look for a DVD or Blu-ray copy, of Erin Loves Angela from 1975. She plays Angela. It's kind of an urban version of Romeo and Juliet. Of course, she was Sparkle in Sparkle from 1976. And then, yes, probably most famous for playing Coco in Alan Parker's Fame in 1980. She's also on the receiving end of one of the more uncomfortable moments in film, when she is the victim of a nefarious photographer. Brutal, brutal film, brutal moment to watch. Would later appear in, well, same in the 80s, in Killing Him Softly, appeared as herself in DC Cab. Was Ginny Lee in City Heat? I have to explain this. In 1984, there were not one, not two, but three period piece films set in the 30s and 40s. City Heat, The Cotton Club, and Johnny Dangerously. And my introduction to the song Embraceable You were from Irene Cara in City Heat and Mary Lou Henner in Johnny Dangerously. So thank you, ladies, for that. And then she teamed up with Tatum O'Neill for Certain Fury in 1985, where, and I'm reading from the screen, during a courtroom shootout, a teenage sex worker and a small-time crook wind up on the run to fight their way through the drug underworld. So It's sort of, kind of the Defiant Ones, only they're not shackled. You also have Peter Fonda and Moses Gunn involved in this film. It's that kind of mid-'80s, low-budget. It was New World Video, if I remember right, that put that out. So, you know, this was her attempt at heavy drama. Busted Up, Caged in Paradiso, and then, you know, did a few other things. So I'm not playing the two songs. I'm not playing Fame, and I'm not playing Flashdance. I'll get to that in a moment. But I do want to acknowledge what the films were up against. So at the 1980 Academy Awards, Fame was the winner. Here are your four other nominees that year. By the way, Fame, music by Michael Gore, lyrics by Dean Pitchford. Your other nominees, 9 to 5, On the Road Again, because I was in the film Honeysuckle Rose, Out Here on My Own, also from Fame, and People Alone from the Competition. So, okay, I don't remember that song, but those three, pretty strong. And then in 1983, Flashdance, What a Feeling won, and Irene Cara co-did the lyrics with Keith Forsay. Giorgio Moroder, of course, did the music. Up against Maniac from Flashdance, Over You from Tender Mercies. You don't remember that song. I do. I love it. It's Betty Buckley sings it in the film. It's heartbreaking for me. Papa, Can You Hear Me from Yentl. Barbara Streisand is still pissed. And then The Way He Makes Me Feel, also from Yentl. So two really strong years for the years that Fame and Flashdance won. But for me today, we will end this week's show with Irene Cara doing Out Here on My Own from Fame. I just dig it. And we'll try this again next week. Hopefully, we'll be talking about The Whale and hopefully some more grown-up movies on next week's show. Thank you for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Thanks, Irene. And Christine McVie, although I need to work on the film impact, films that had Fleetwood Mac. But for now, here's Irene Cara, Out Here on My Own.
Sometimes I wonder where I've been, who I am, do I fit in, make believing is hard alone. Out here on my own, we're always proving who we are, always reaching for that rising star to guide me far and shine me home. Out here on my own. When I'm down and feeling blue, I close my eyes.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!